This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Every January, Melbourne feels completely different. In fact, I love it this time of year. The city fills up, restaurants buzz, hotels sell out, and suddenly tennis is everywhere. So is midsummer. But behind the atmosphere and the selfies at Melbourne Park, there's a much bigger economic story playing out right across the state. So how does an event like the Australian Open actually flow through our economy, and who really does benefit? Well, joining us is Professor Robert Brooks from Monash University, who studies the economics of major events. Robert, welcome to Drive.
Thanks, Warren. Lovely to speak to you.
When we talk about the Australian Open as an economic driver, what does that really mean in everyday terms for Victoria?
Sure. So, thanks, Warren. So, I mean, one of the things that the Australian Open has really done well and worked on really well, and it comes a bit to your earlier comments, is, you know, to make it a big part of the Melbourne event calendar. And so, you know, it's part of being a showcase Melbourne event. And it's also part of the showcase of the elite tennis calendar. Now, one of the things that happens around major events is you get an economic stimulus from those events because you get a set of visitors that are attending the events, and those visitors are engaging in expenditure. You know, the simple one is if they're traveling from overseas or interstate, they're clearly doing accommodation, but they're not just doing that. They're also making broader expenditure in the economy around the event. You know, the simple thing of that is, you know, the food and restaurant side of it. And then what you get is, as those expenditures are made, you get multiple working through the economy. And so that's what the Australian Open is doing in an economic sense for us now on a regular basis.
So the ticket sales itself, that's only a small part, is it, of the whole economic makeup?
So the ticket sales, as you correctly say, the ticket sales are an important part of it, and it's an important part of the revenue of their running the event. But you know, in addition to that, you know, people attending the event are also doing a set of tourist-related activities, and those tourist activities are then generating other matters through the economy as a whole. So what we know is that, you know, over the last few years, post-pandemic, it's roughly about, you know, 40% of the attendees are not Melbourne-based. And so those 40% of attendees that are not Melbourne-based are bringing that economic spending into the local economy. Now, clearly, you know, from the perspective of Victoria, Victoria's getting a bigger boost if the person is coming from overseas, as distinct from if they're coming from regional Victoria. But we also know that visitors to the Open are also doing other leisure activities around the event. So the immediate stuff is sort of, you know, accommodation. Then the next thing is clearly, you know, the cafe and restaurants and the food sector. And then we start getting into more service-related events. And also you get some small infrastructure expenditure happening as well around the event to manage the event logistics dimension.
Robert, how important is an event like the Australian Open in terms of exposure? I mean, there are people overseas watching it on their TV. I mean, do we have any measurement of what the flow-on effect in terms of tourism is, of people who see Melbourne and think, you know what, I'd like to visit one day?
So the tourism bit of this is a really interesting one. So there is a set of people who are, who you could think of as doing, you know, what parts of the academic literature calls tennis tourism. You know, these are people who plan their tourism experiences around, you know, the Grand Slam events in the same way that other people would plan it around, you know, Formula One events. But equally, you also have a set of people who are getting the brand exposure from the fact that you have so many people across the world then having a greater visibility of what's happening in Melbourne. Now, the question then around, you know, the tourism flows from those people are, you know, obviously if they love tennis, they're here when the tennis is on. There's a set of people who get attracted to destinations but actually don't do the travel at the big event time because they don't always the congestion. You know, events have a great buzz and atmosphere to them, but part of the trade-off of that is that they also have a congestion dimension. So what we probably see is a small set of people that gives Melbourne a brand awareness. Now the question you sort of have each year is Melbourne becomes really well known. So what's your incremental gain each year from doing that to the positioning of Melbourne? Presumably it's around, you know, showing that you can do these sort of events and showing that you can bring international visitors in and for them to have a really good experience of the event. And so what you can see from the data they collect is that, you know, a significant portion of attendees are also doing that word of mouth recommendation in saying to people, you know, yes, you saw this event, but, you know, also I went there and it was really well managed and the city's really nice to visit and I was well looked after and I had a really good time. And so you get elements of that word of mouth effect. Now, in terms of, you know, total tourism flows into Australia, you know, there's a lot of wonderful reasons for people to come to Australia, but, you know, this is part. Having the ability to do these sort of events is part of that branding and positioning, I think.
We're chatting with Professor Robert Brooks from Monash University about how the Australian Open boosts Victoria's economy. I want to know, what do you love about the Oz Open? Is it the vibe? Is it the tennis? Or is it the city feeling alive? 0427 569 949 is the SMS number. Robert, the Australian Open, it isn't a one-off mega event like, for example, the Olympics. How does its economic value compare to the events such as the Olympics?
Yeah, so the Olympics stuff and mega events like the Olympics are always a really interesting thing of what happens. So on the Olympics, there is this question of, you know, to run those big events, you need infrastructure. And for clearly things like the Olympics, you need a lot of infrastructure. How do you make sure that that infrastructure has an ongoing usage outside of the event? The issue you have with the Australian Open is, you know, you build a set of infrastructure and you know that infrastructure in terms of running the tennis tournament is going to get great usage over time when the Australian Open's on. But the benefit flows that always come from events such as that, where you have to commit to building infrastructure, is can you get an ongoing usage of that infrastructure? What you don't want to do is end up building infrastructure that's great, but it has a single use for a couple of weeks of the year. And for those, you know, 2 to 3 weeks of the year, you've got to get a lot of benefit out of that. So you've got to think around how you do this. There's clearly tennis Australian Open specific infrastructure in the event. But there's also a broader infrastructure development piece there. And so I think that's always the trade-off. And the trade-off around, you know, done well, that infrastructure stuff can be really good, but done poorly, which certainly some cities have done around the Olympics in the past, is, you know, they've ended up with infrastructure that's almost ended up as single use. So I think they're the trade-offs. And what you've now got with the Australian Open is sort of this, you know, trend, albeit broken by the pandemic years where it was clearly disrupted, of growth in the infrastructure benefit, and also an idea of trying to think about, you know, how do we broaden the event into being a bigger thing for Melbourne as a whole.
Do you think, Robert, part of the spending too has nothing to do with the tennis directly itself, and it's about people like myself who think, you know what, I like the atmosphere. I'm going to get out. I'm not interested in tennis for one second, but I'm going to get out and enjoy the buzz that's around the city at the moment. Do you think it motivates a lot of us to get out more and spend more money?
So I think, you know, events done well, where they're well managed, can have those sort of benefits for people, because some people are clearly attracted to the excitement and the contribution to having the buzz of a lot of people in the city and a lot of visitors in the city. And if you think about how our, you know, calendar works, you know, January is one of these sort of interesting times of the year where a lot of other activities is not happening for really good reasons. So how do you get the year off to a start by being able to do that? And do you have people who are attracted to being in the city more because there's a lot more people around and the city has that that rich dynamic vibe to it. So for some people, you know, that's going to be quite an appealing thing. And I think part of the positioning of the Australian Open that they've sort of worked in over time is to, you know, the elite tennis side of it is extremely important, and some people love elite tennis, and if that's your thing, that's absolutely great. But I think they're also trying to position it as saying, you know, it's this sort of event where it's got, you know, other activities happening around it as well. And that's clearly a desirable thing, because it also potentially creates that stream of broader infrastructure benefits down the track.
It's interesting, a few messages coming in. Josh in Collingwood says, the energy around the city is unreal. Melbourne feels global. And Alice says, walking past Melbourne Park at night during the Open is magic. And Ben says, I don't even watch tennis. I just love the atmosphere. So clearly people are getting onto the buzz there, Robert.
Yes, and I think that's part of, you know, the key about doing these sort of events is if you're going to do them, you have to do them well. If you can do them and do them well, you get a showcase benefit. But you also get the dynamics of being able to say, you know, look, we can do these things and we can manage, you know, having a lot of people around and a lot of energy and all of that. Now, part of that is making sure that, you know, you get the infrastructure piece done correctly as well. And where cities that don't do this perhaps as well struggle is their infrastructure ends up with a very narrow use. You want to have a broader base. You don't want to lose sight of the fact that you are running this extremely important elite sport event for really highly talented athletes that, you know, are being here as well. So you want to make sure you still do that bit of it well. But you want to do those other bits around and try and create that energy. And in a calendar of the year sense, you know, it ends up being well-timed from that perspective.
Are there parts of the economy that perhaps don't benefit as much as we might assume during major events like the Australian Open?
Well, the issue always around that, I think, Warren, is, you know, there are a set of people for whom a lot of people being round and a dynamic energy is a real positive and a real plus. There are a set of people, particularly around events, who don't like the congestion and they don't like the busyness as much. And so clearly there are always around events the trade-offs of people who really like the buzz of it, as distinct from the people who are saying, look, you know, I don't really want to be stuck in these big crowds and I don't want to be stuck in this congestion, and so I'm going to go and do something else. Now, that's potentially less acute around things like the Australian Open. But we do know for the mega event stuff like the Olympics and the World Cup, that clearly attracts a lot of people who want to be part of the event. But it also produces a displacement effect where you get some locals who say, look, I'm going to be somewhere else. And you get some tourists who potentially would have been attracted to your city who are saying, look, I don't want to be there when those crowds are around. So you have to think about how you do that congestion management for the people whose, you know, day-to-day life is being in Melbourne. So the key bit of that is, you know, making, you know, transport's always a big part of infrastructure around events. Are you making sure you're running enough transport so, yes, everyone can get to the event, but also everyone that's doing other things can still get about that activity? Because if they don't have that, then you do get a displacement effect going on. Clearly around people who are local, you know, we obviously... it would be nice to have an unlimited budget to spend on everything we wanted all the time. But, of course, we don't live in that world. We're all subject to a budget constraint. And, you know, a dollar that you spend on being at the Australian Open and having activity is a dollar that you don't spend doing something else.
That's true.
So you have to be cognizant of those trade-off issues, and you have to make sure that as much as possible you capture the benefits, But you also don't end up, you know, displacing the local residents that are providing your economic activity in the city all year round. So that's always a trade-off sort of issues. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of debate and a lot of complex modelling that goes into that. Ideally, with something like the Australian Open, you also want people doing, you know, other ancillary tourism-related activities around being in Melbourne, And that means you've got to manage potentially those larger crowds as well. So that's always a challenge that you have to make sure you manage well. If you do that well, you showcase it. If you don't do that well, you know, that can be adverse for you.
Robert, are you a tennis fan?
I have been a few times, yes. So I have been a few times. I actually went to the Australian Open back when it was at Kooyong. Oh. I don't go, so that gives you an idea of how old I am. I don't go all the time. But I have been at times. I think the elite sport side of it is absolutely superb. You know, you've got these talented world class people who are great at what they do, and you know, I think watching that is superb. And you know, as my sporting skills in tennis didn't have sufficient hand eye coordination to remotely have the skills to be able to do that. But you know, I think it is part. It comes a bit to your comment as well. It's partly there for the people who really love tennis, but it's also partly there as an event, and you want to try and get people doing both of those things. So I think it's very well, you know, it is very well done, but one should always be conscious to make sure that it's working well and that how do you keep improving it.
Absolutely. Robert, good to chat with you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Ron. Have a lovely day.
Thank you. That was Robert Brooks from Monash University.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.